People are actually losing their homes and asking to rent in our apartments.
The biggest obstacle is, of course, lack of funds.
We think we've helped 58,000 people.
We're constantly having a greater demand for affordable housing.
Welcome to the Affordable Housing Podcast, brought to you by Eden Housing.
Rick Holliday was but a young pup when he became the first executive director of Eden Housing back in 1979. The housing landscape in Hayward, California, and elsewhere has come a long way, as we will hear on today's episode. Hi, I'm Joanne Green, and welcome to the Affordable Housing Podcast. I'm pleased to introduce Rick Holliday, who is often credited with bringing New York-inspired lofts to San Francisco. These days, Rick's president of Holliday Development, specializing in the creation of live workspaces in a constantly changing market. Rick's developed more than 1,000 homes and lofts and has transacted more than $300 million in real estate business. Throughout the years, though, he's remained dedicated to the creation of affordable housing. Welcome, Rick.
It's nice to see you, Joanne.
Good to see you, too. So talk to me about affordable housing. Is this a way of honoring your roots, or do you really see it as a component of being a responsible housing developer?
Well, I actually think it's both. I think that as someone who studied planning at Berkeley, where the emphasis of the whole program was on workforce housing and affordable housing, I spent the better part of the 70s looking at the problem and found that the government was the main source of the affordable housing and got inspired by the idea of working with a group like Eden Housing entrepreneurially as a not-for-profit to build it. And once I did that, I got involved in other not-for-profits as well and have stayed involved. And as a for-profit developer, I've become more and more aware of how important it is from other developers and other businesses because we can't house our workforce.
Is there money to be made in affordable housing?
There's not as much as most of us would like, and that's the reason why nonprofits exist and there's quite a bit of subsidy. In some parts of California, it's possible to do it, but I think in the Bay Area, it's quite difficult to do it without some form of help.
And that's because the cost of everything is so high?
Yes. I mean, the biggest problem, of course, is there's just not enough available land, and the price of what's left keeps going up and is harder and harder to come by. And then from there, you start working with the cost of building materials and construction and all of the attendant high cost of the Bay Area, partly driven by the high cost of housing, which are driving the wages up. So it's a never-ending circle.
And yet Northern California, as I understand it, is in the forefront of affordable housing.
Actually, it is. And as we talked earlier, Eden Housing was in the forefront of building affordable housing entrepreneurially as a nonprofit 40 years ago and continues to do so today. Northern California is where the problem got the worst the earliest, and I think it's where the innovation came from that's being utilized all over the country now.
What has changed over this 30 years that you've been in the business?
Probably the most significant is the level of sophistication and the sheer number of people involved in this. 30 years ago, we were a lonely bunch down in Hayward at Eden Housing, sort of sorting out how to do things differently because the Nixon administration had cut most of the federal housing programs that had been popular in the 60s, and we were left with very little to work with. And so Eden's board was an entrepreneurial bunch, and they had the audacity to hire young staff and try to do things differently and went about building a lot of affordable housing just by doing things that hadn't been done before. And many of the things Eden did 30 years ago and in the over the last 25 years were done for the first time, and other people have taken inspiration from them.
So what kinds of things are going on today that excite you in this world of affordable housing?
Probably the most interesting and most exciting, I think, are the areas in which nonprofits are working with some of the existing tenants that are in their buildings to get them something more than housing. Eden has been particularly innovative and working with different social skills and job training and educational opportunities to make sure that people can move on and open the housing back up. So that's a recent innovation that I think is important. I think the nonprofit's been in the forefront of green building, and I think that's, even going back 30 years ago, La Solana being a solar development before people cared much about those things. I think in sort of looking at the people, and also looking at the products, green products.
You know, it's interesting because we tend to think of building green as being more expensive in terms of upfront costs. How is that affordable for people building affordable housing?
Well, it is somewhat more expensive, but I think, again, when we were in doing projects 30 years ago, we were the first to actually use dual-paned windows. They cost about 10% more than an average window, but they were cutting people's heating and cooling costs by such a large amount that the repayment of just that single cost was usually about 8 months of operating, which is an incredibly short payback. And so,
but it isn't payback to the developer.
No, it's a very good point. It's a payback to the consumer. And the reason why most for-profit developers aren't interested, of course, is they don't get the true benefit. In fact, it's a true cost to them when they spend more money and save operating costs for the consumer. Eden, by virtue of the fact it's not for profit, board members serve voluntarily, and there aren't profits sort of re-syndicated and resold, looks out for the customer first.
In the developments that you do that are for profit, do you put in double pane glass?
I do, and I think some developers do. As a for profit, we're not all stuck with horns and chasing the highest profit. Most of the ideals that I gained from working at Eden and other not-for-profits I try to bring forward in a for-profit company. Oftentimes they're challenged because you're trying to meet investors' needs and objectives to get the project acceptable and financeable. But we've been able to do a lot of the things that we did back in the not-for-profit days.
Is the demand for affordable housing growing all the time?
Yes, and I think the reason why is if you just look at the growth of income against the growth of the cost of housing. If you're falling behind there, you're constantly having a greater demand for affordable housing than you had the year before. It won't be until the incomes go up faster than the cost of housing that you'll start to see there some reduction
in my
the
lifetime,
overall demand.
Please.
Yes, and I think actually we may have a short-term circumstance here where if housing costs come down 10-15% because of the run-up that's been so incredible, you may actually have, at least for a year, some greater level of affordability if incomes don't fall.
And which is to say that people who approach affordable housing as transitional housing may be able to actually become first-time home buyers.
Yes. I think this is a perfect time for people to look at being a first-time home buyer. Low interest rates and lower prices.
Other than that short blip, where do you see things heading?
I think we look to Europe for a lot of our inspiration here. I think things will be higher density. I think things will be more somewhat more communal in terms of the way people relate to each other. There's some very exciting housing that's been in the Netherlands called co-housing, where people have lived in closer quarters and shared a number of activities, and that's becoming more popular in the affordable housing realm here. I think people living in smaller spaces and more efficiently designed is going to become more commonplace. And I think the nonprofits will probably be the most aggressive in exploring those areas first, and the private sector will likely follow.
Is there a component of the whole live workspace concept in affordable housing?
There is somewhat. I think that the many people are living and working out of their residence or home or whatever you may call it. For a variety of reasons. And there's, with the advent of the laptop computer and the internet and cell phones and all of the mobile communication technologies.
And the cost of fuel.
I think that more and more people are blurring the line between living and working, even if they have a job.
So as that happens, you think affordable housing nonprofits will move into that space more than they have?
They may. I actually haven't seen many nonprofits venture into it in the last 5 or 10 years when we've been active in it. But I think it's an area that's very could be fruitful for nonprofits, because many of the people that are nonprofit customers have incomes between, say, $25,000 and $65,000. And those folks' jobs may be at risk, and they may be looking for ways to generate income and more job security by taking control of their life.
Generally speaking, how do for-profit developers view affordable housing?
Generally speaking, I think they're somewhat mystified by it. They don't know quite what to make of it. I find that when I talk to large home builders and different people from outside the area, they think that the problem in many cases needs to be solved with greater governmental intervention because they feel like a lot of the policies foisted on them only erode their profit margins and their abilities to build the housing that they can build. And they're well aware the housing they're building is only meeting a small segment of the market. So as the market gets more and more difficult, there's a larger and larger sort of middle gap group that's not getting any attention. And I think that's a political problem. People sort of above some of the government programs, say where the government programs stop off maybe $60,000 income, and sort of where the market picks up, which may be closer to $100,000, there's a large gap between maybe $60,000 and $100,000 of family income, where almost nothing's being done. And I think the nonprofits may need to pick up some of that, and they may need to be partnering with some for-profits to do that as well.
Do you personally think the government needs to get more involved?
I'm not sure if they need to get more involved, but I think that the government's greatest role is providing some kind of financing capital for people trying to buy houses that is workable. I think after the subprime mess, though, it's going to be difficult for them to be very innovative at the moment. I think they're going to be spending more time trying to keep people on the houses they're in before they look for new ways to get them into more houses. So in the short run, I don't think government's role is going to expand. I think once the subprime mess is done, I think if you go back and look at FHA and some of the programs that opened up middle class opportunities for workforce people, there'll be something.
And what's your intention? Will you remain involved in this issue?
Yes. I think I'll be involved in affordable housing till I'm done in the real estate business. It's too important and too much. It's too gratifying when you to be able to see people move in that wouldn't have otherwise and see the benefit of all the hard work.
Great. Well, we thank you for the work that you do.
It's a pleasure.
Rick Holliday, President of Holliday Development. I'm Joanne Green.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.